Good evening, and welcome to tonight's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. My name is Marcia Sitkoski. I'm the co-chair of the club's Environment and Natural Resources member-led forum and the chair for your evening program. Tonight, we're going to be hearing from locally-based wildcat conservationist Zara McDonald, who will be discussing Bay Area mountain lions and the work currently underway to study and protect them. Zara is an entrepreneur and the founder and director of the Felidae Conservation Fund. She's going to speak much more about this, but I just wanted to mention that these keystone predators, are also called pumas, play a critical role in maintaining the health and biodiversity of our ecosystems. However, the expansion of human populations, is causing increasing encounters and conflicts between humans and pumas and growing tensions in our local communities, and as I know we've all read about that. So let's now hear from Zara McDonald as she presents both scientific fact and personal perspective regarding the latest findings from the groundbreaking work of the Bay Area Puma Project. Zara McDonald, please.
Good evening. I start with an image of a particular species that is often identified as a mountain lion. Can you believe it? I say this because 85 to 90% of all sightings of mountain lions in California are actually erroneous, not sightings of mountain lions. But I'm here tonight to talk to you about the puma, Puma concolor. And I like to start with a reference to extinction. The moment of extinction is generally considered to be the death of the last individual of the species, although the capacity to breed and recover is lost long before this point. Esperanza was the 24th cat of the Bay Area Puma Project research, and we called her Esperanza for hope. There was a science article back in July, and a direct quote from that article describes the situation we face well. Humans have touched off the world's latest mass extinction, and the consequences are being felt on land and in water systems as large predators vanish. Esperanza was familiar to us before we collared her, and we captured a beautiful video of her approaching a carcass. Mountain lions, when they move on the environment, are very careful. They move delicately. And when we watch videos of mountain lions, it's important to remember that their own survival is at stake, so they are very carefully scanning environments to make sure it's safe for them to continue. The loss of large predators is humankind's most pervasive influence on the natural world. Roadkill being one of these, depredation permits being another, specifically for mountain lions. These cats are on the move, so they spent the priority, the most of their lives are spent on the move, and specifically with males. We will talk more about females, but when we think about ecosystems, what is an ecosystem? Everything in the natural world is connected, right? An ecosystem is a community of living and non-living things that all work together. So water, temperature, plants, animals, air, light, soil, all working together is a complete ecosystem. And a healthy ecosystem has many species. Diversity is the word, and is much less likely to be seriously damaged the more species we have. Complete ecosystems would consist of a mountain lion killing its prey, and then a spectrum of other species feeding on that kill. So we have, in the video, a bobcat and a coyote both feeding on a mountain lion kill together, sharing that kill. Gila Day Conservation Fund is a six-year-old organization. We're based in Sausalito Headlands. Our mission is to advance the global conservation of wildcats and their habitats through a couple of tools and specific techniques. So obviously research and data are key and essential to us learning more about the movement of species. Compelling education is underrated and needs attention. It's one of the things we seek to accomplish with one of our goals here. Cutting edge technology, we have technology available today that is actually enabling us to reach masses of people and through more creative techniques. Conservation collaborations will guide us and assist us in making some dramatic changes on the landscape to protect these species. Why should we care about cats? Felid species are in decline globally. All felids are threatened or endangered, except for our domestic cats, domestic pets, and feral cats. So let's think about this. They're charismatic and mysterious, all cat species. They're often indicator species of the health of ecosystems. Their very presence defines a healthy ecosystem. They all have common challenges. So if we think about the challenges that felid species face around the world, we think about habitat fragmentation. This leads to loss of genetic diversity. Loss of prey is a concern for species in other parts of the world, and we've got illegal trade, captive breeding as long-time issues for felids, especially with beautiful spotted coats. Disease, we've got a number of diseases that are jumping from domestic animals over to our wild felids and other wildlife. Pesticide poisoning is becoming more of an issue. Our rat poisons, anticoagulants, rodenticides are of great concern for felid species. Human-wildlife conflict is on the rise, specifically because of habitat fragmentation, and we'll talk a little bit more about that tonight. So some of our global collaborations are on a number of other wild felids, 37 wild felid species around the world. And our flagship project is the Bay Area Puma Project. So I'm here to sort of talk to you more tonight about the mountain lion and bring some awareness about the species that lives amongst us. Morris Hornocker, back in the 60s, conducted the first comprehensive study on mountain lions. This was his PhD back in 67. Direct quote from that is, "The lion plays a tremendous role in wilderness ecosystems. It sits at the absolute apex of the food chain. It is an indicator of the health of the ecosystem and helps maintain the stability of the system." Do we really need the mountain lion? I often have this question asked to me. Well, absolutely we do, but let me talk a little bit more about why. Regulating force. The mountain lion preserves ecological integrity, keeps the ecosystem honest. Its very presence in the ecosystem offers numerous benefits for the ecosystem. It has the greatest habitat size needs of other species. So if we protect the mountain lion, this species, as an umbrella species, is protecting by its presence a number of others underneath it. It's highly charismatic. It inspires community support and excitement for conservation. The mountain lion is a top-down regulator. It structures herbivore communities. It plays a key biological role. There's this central role in the evolution of the ecologies. In the Bay Area, we have a specific need to keep this keystone species around because we have lost the grizzly and the wolf, and possible irreversible harm has been caused from their loss. And so our last hope for original ecological balance is, in fact, the mountain lion. The puma, Puma concolor, is the scientific terminology. Mountain lion, cougar, other familiar terms for this cat. It has more names than any other mammal. It's in the Guinness Book of World Records for the number of names it holds. Panther, ghost cat, catamount, shadow cat, screamer, red tiger, Mexican lion are only a few of the names. And many of these names have tremendous stories that go along with them. The traditional range for the mountain lion was most of North, Central, and South America, Canadian Yukon to the tip of South America. This cat is an incredibly adaptable species, sea level to 16, 17,000 feet. So I just came back from the Andes a couple months back, and we have pumas with very large home ranges up in the Andes at 17,000 feet, persisting but with very little prey, so their home ranges are much larger. Native Americans offered respect to the puma. New European immigrants brought fear and loathing. The mountain lion was viewed as varmint. The present-day puma range is actually much reduced, almost by 30%. Much of the east coast of the U.S. is now missing the mountain lion species. Pumas do not roar. When we think about physical characteristics for this cat, let me touch on a few of those. They actually lack a specialized hyoid apparatus, which enables that guttural roaring that you'll hear in the lion and the tiger. They are ambush predators. They require excellent sensory perception, so vision, olfactory, and hearing need to be particularly sharp. Coat color varies geographically. So in the San Francisco Bay region, we have a tawny reddish-brown color in our mountain lions. Females and males vary in size, as would be expected. And in the Bay Area region, females are up to about 100 pounds and males up to about 170. Smallest pumas are near the equator, and the largest exist near the poles. This cat is 5 to 9 feet long. So if you think about the length, 5 to 9 feet, 40% of that length is a long, thick, cylindrical tail. This is a defining characteristic in the mountain lion, with a dark tip usually at the end of that tail. Incredible jumpers, they vertically jump up to 18 feet in one leap, horizontally 20 to 30 feet in one leap. Again, there's this adaptation that has occurred over time for the lions, this long hind limb that allows them to spring onto the back of their prey as an ambush predator. Typical caloric needs for a 3 to 4 year old male are 6,000 calories a day. That's about a deer a week. What does the mountain lion eat? It's an obligate carnivore. It needs meat to survive. Generalist predator. So what we generally refer to for mountain lion prey is mouse to moose, the occasional grasshopper or greenery in between. So that can help them with hairballs, and it's like the much-needed fiber that doesn't exist in that deer that makes up 60 to 80% of that diet. Rabbits, raccoons, birds, and foxes, and yes, people are surprised when I say even bobcats and coyotes. A female adult can take down 4 to 5 times her weight. Again, think about a powerful ambush predator. Stalk, sprint, and ambush. This is how the mountain lion feeds itself. It's usually watches, lays in wait, watches its prey, and ambushes from behind. So it usually jumps on the back of the neck of the prey, quick bite, and severs the spinal column. making it a quick death for that prey. This was a bighorn sheep. Once the mountain lion feeds on the prey, in this case a deer, it might stay feeding on that prey for 1 to 3 days, depending on whether it's scared off of that kill. If it feeds for a period, it will leave. It may lie close by. It will cache that prey, typically, to preserve it, protect it from other predators, and enable another feeding at a later time. And this is particularly important because it's tough for these guys to take down their prey, so they really need to be able to come back and feed on that meal later. They're very easily scared off of prey, so what I recommend is if you ever see a prey item, a deer kill out in the wild, stay away from it because the mountain lions are possibly coming back to feed, and you might drive them away. Some of their social behaviors, we have vocalizations of the mountain lion. I have a few here for you. This is a purring mountain lion. This is a kitten calling out to its mother. It's a very common communication tool. And that very eerie sound is a female in heat. A female is in heat for an average of 5 to 6 days in that period of estrus, looking for the mate. So that's her signal to the mate that she's ready, to the male that she's ready to mate. They make very similar sounds to your house cat. Males and females will spend 2 to 3 days together mating during that time. And then if she is pregnant, her gestation is 90 to 92 days. She selects a den site for giving birth and usually selects a very protected den site for that period of time because the kittens, once she gives birth, are very dependent on the mother. Female mountain lions reproduce at about 2 years and every 2 to 3 years thereafter. Scrapes are another form of communication between mountain lions, and the scrapes are when the mountain lion will use its two hind legs and disturb the terrain, scraping it backward, oftentimes urinating in that mark, which is communicating to other mountain lions and also sending a signal that this is my spot and I'm moving through here and this is my home range.
I'd like to remind our listening audience that this is a program by the Commonwealth Club of California and that you're listening to Zora McDonald discussing the interaction between humans and mountain lions.
Mountain lions are native to the Americas. They have the largest geographical range of any terrestrial mammal except for humans. They persist in very low densities. So contrary to what many people believe, when one mountain lion is killed, it has a tremendous impact on the population of mountain lions. When we consider a home range of a mountain lion, an average home range for a female is 50 square miles. An average home range size for a male is 100, 200, even 300, 400 square miles. This is contiguous habitat they require to persist. Then we consider the population interacting together. Females and females will overlap their territory a little bit, and females and males will overlap. A common scenario is a male with 2 or 3 females within his home range. Males and males are usually very intolerant of each other, so we will often see scenarios of fighting to the death between 2 males for territory. Mountain lions live solitary lives, very few exceptions. When they're mating, females with cubs or siblings, oftentimes dispersing together, will spend a few days together before they part. An important statistic for us to remember is females are pregnant or raising young almost 3/4 of their lives. So if a female mountain lion is killed by hunting, depredation permit, or roadkill, the chances are very good that she's leaving behind dependent cubs or that she's pregnant. The lifespan in the wild for the mountain lion is on average 6 to 13 years, even though the studies we've been involved with in the last 6 years, we're seeing much, much lower numbers of survival. So oftentimes 6 to 7 years old is the point at which the lions are killed, and sometimes even earlier. So dispersal is becoming an issue for mountain lions trying to establish new home ranges within urban settings. Much more of a challenge. Puma kittens are born in litters of 1 to 6. Most typically we see 2 to 4 size litters. They're born densely spotted and blind. So the kittens are born blind. Their eyes open at about 2 weeks to this cobalt blue. They're eating meat at 6 weeks, and they're nursing still nursing up to 3 to 4 months. So at about 6 months of age, they're about the size of an average bobcat. And then they start to travel and hunt with the mother and start making their own kills, field mice, rabbits, small little species that they can master their skill on. The spots start to fade. We'll still see some evidence of spotting on the mountain lions at a year old. During that time, there's a special pressure on the mother to feed the cubs, so she may need to take out 2, maybe even 3 deer a week to feed her cubs as they grow older. So often in the studies, we'll look at the first year or two of life for the cubs, and what we'll do to look at this is to put little expandable collars on the kittens to follow them for the first year. And they're VHF collars, and they're very tiny and light. And it enables us to understand a little bit more about the behaviors of the family group and some of the challenges they face in the urban settings. Den sites are especially camouflaged, so we can usually see a den of 4 kittens that are very hard to distinguish between the terrain. And it's nice to see, actually, because we'll sometimes walk right by these den sites because the camouflage is mastered so greatly by nature. Cubs actually face tremendous challenges for survival. In states where we have a sport hunt, and I can name a few, Wyoming, Idaho, Montana, the sport hunt actually brings the chance of survival for cubs down to about 20%. If we jump to California, the only state where there is no sport hunt, we're looking at closer to 50, 60% chance of survival. However, that's changing. We have increasing issues with urbanization that is becoming especially problematic for dispersing cubs. Young mountain lions need to stay with the mother for close to 2 years before they can move out and be on their own and successfully live as an adult. So if we find a young cub about a year old, we're probably who's lost its mother, we're probably going to see that cub not make it. Mountain lions have had a very difficult past with humans. So back in the 16, 1700s, Connecticut and Massachusetts were offering 20 shillings for a dead catamount. If we jump forward to 1900, the puma was extinct by 1900 in the eastern U.S., California was headed down the same path. However, a moratorium was issued on the killing of lions in the 70s because we had close to 500-600 left, so we'd almost lost them. By 1990, a long struggle passed Proposition 117, and the current status of the mountain lion is specially protected mammal. However, the issues we have in California are a few, actually. Urbanization has led to 150-plus lions per year being killed from depredation permits and roadkill incidents. So what is a depredation permit? A depredation permit is issued if your pet, hobby animal, or livestock is killed by a mountain lion. And one of the problems with this legal situation is that oftentimes a mountain lion is killed when a hobby animal or livestock is not properly protected. So some of our education efforts are focusing on this. Leading causes of death for mountain lions in the state of California, depredation at the top of the list. So we have over 100 cats per year killed from depredation permits. Closer to 60 per year are killed by our cars. They become roadkill, and that's on the rise. The poaching number for the death of for mountain lion mortalities in the state of California is unknown, but we know it's quite high. We have a number of interactions with ranchers, and the ranchers are often boasting about killing mountain lions. Disease, again, is diseases that are jumping over from our domestic animals, poisoning, the rodenticide issue. Public safety is the bottom of this list, and it's surprising to many when I tell them that the number of mountain lions in California that are killed per year because they are a public safety threat to you or I is 3. That's next to nothing. So you know what that tells us is that mountain lions are still doing a great job avoiding humans. They want nothing to do with humans. They are navigating our development, our roadways, and communities pretty stealthily and masterfully, yet there are times when they can't quite manage it. This is increasing. In the Bay Area today, we have several research questions we're hoping to answer. The keystone species are in decline. The impact of fragmented habitat is tremendous. What this leads to is loss of natural movement pathways for wildlife. The mountain lion sits at the top of that food chain. So we have a number of challenges that really face us with regard to this apex predator. In particular, in California, the Santa Cruz Mountains and the Santa Monica Mountains are two areas where we have isolated populations at risk of extinction. We need a long-term approach. Cannot be crisis management. Pumas are resilient, but they are vulnerable to human effects, so they can fall to local extinction. We need to get ahead of this problem before it's too late. What happens when we remove an apex predator from an ecosystem? Well, to be honest, a number of very negative effects result. Deer populations increase rapidly. So if we think about the mountain lion's role in the ecosystem, it's actually removing weakened and diseased prey from the system simply by existing. That keeps the ecosystem healthy. So the disease in the ecosystem will increase. Unchecked grazing by deer is a situation that occurs when we've lost the predators in the system. So what will happen at that point is the deer will continue to feed, never looking over their shoulder and never quite having a need to fear a predator. They feed on the ground cover. So they effectively remove the habitat for songbirds, grouse, and a number of other species. Mountain lions being present in the system assist in maintaining this balance. Pumas in our consciousness. So what we think about with mountain lions oftentimes is fear. There's a fear mechanism in humans that kicks in, and it's increased by news reports and media coverage that creates public anxiety. All of it quite exaggerated, I must say. When we understand more and we educate ourselves about mountain lions, we actually understand in a different perspective how they really want nothing to do with humans. So we think about our science and our data that is pulled from these studies that we do. It doesn't enable us to conserve mountain lions. People conserve mountain lions. So we are enriched when big predators are present, and pumas remind us that we are in fact, part of nature. A few stories from a couple of the studies that we're involved with. There's a study in the Grand Canyon that was a two-year period of data collection, GPS-collared cats. And Eric York is the biologist who was working on this study. And a couple of things they found from this study that were of great relevance. These animals are very well traveled. A mountain lion left the south rim of the Grand Canyon one evening and traversed the entire base of the Grand Canyon, the raging Colorado River, and got to the tip of the north rim by 5 a.m. the next morning. So well-traveled cats is almost an understatement. Surprisingly close to humans, GPS-collared cats were sleeping, moving, and living within 20 meters of tourist-traveled trails in the Grand Canyon. In 2 years, not one person saw a cat. Stealthy, yes. Let's go to the Santa Monica Mountains, where a study's been underway for a number of years, a really great illustration of an urban setting where this lion persists despite humans. Local extinction? Possibly. 20, 30 years ago, a healthy population of 50 or so mountain lions in the Santa Monica Mountains. Today, 4 lions remain. There's no pathway in and out of the Santa Monica Mountains safely enabling the cats to move to the opposite ranges. In the Sierra Nevada, Ann Orlando conducted a study for her PhD, and what she was concerned about out of the results from this study was, again, urban development, rural development. Hobby animals are a big issue. So a lot of lions being killed, mortalities because of unprotected livestock and hobby animals. 6 out of 9 of the animals from her study in the urban setting died. 1 out of 10 up in the Sierras, in the logging country and the wild spaces died. Big difference in the mortality rate there. Humans play a huge role. Brian Jansen, for his PhD in South Dakota, was studying dispersal. South Dakota was just recently repopulated with mountain lions, somewhat small population. And what he found was these cats not only traversed, again, long distances when they dispersed, but he lost close to 30% of his study cats due to hunting. And these were young, dispersing, growing cats. The Bay Area Puma Project was conceived back in late 2007. We had a year of pilot study and started tracking cats in the Santa Cruz Mountains with Chris Wilmers from UCSC. So this was his research underway, and we worked with a special GPS accelerometer collar technology, which basically enables us to record location information and 3-axis dimensional information on the cat. So it's giving us unprecedented information on social and behavioral movements of these cats, challenges to them as they're trying to cross roadways, and also how degraded is their habitat? What patches are good anymore, and where can they no longer persist? Santa Cruz Mountains, to date, 33 cats have been fitted with GPS tracking collars. A number of mortalities, and I have to say most of those mortalities are due to depredation permits. So we have 1 or 2 cats in this Highway 17 region who have been hit by cars. But we have an issue with a depredation permit, and it's something that requires tremendous education for ranchers and hobby animal owners. Our Vectronics Global Star Collar is a satellite transfer of data. So what we're pulling on these cats in different studies is anywhere from 1, 2 to 4 hours. Every 4 hours, we'll pull that data from where the cat is moving, depending, again, on what we're trying to learn. We use a couple of techniques when we capture mountain lions, and one is hounds who track the scent of the mountain lion, and the mountain lion will actually run up a tree to get away from the stress, usually wait the stress out and come down. Well, when we come along with our research field team, we will tranquilize that cat in the tree. So we'll often put a dissociative and a sedative into that cat via dart gun, and the cat will run down the tree, and we will work him up over 30, 45 minutes under the sedative and dissociative. Cats are just amazing, graceful creatures, even under duress. So much of the visuals and footage I show of mountain lions is just how graceful they remain, even when their lives are, to them, seriously endangered. So oftentimes when we're working up an animal, we will pull all of the data. We'll sex, age, and size it, and we'll fit it with a GPS collar, and we'll sit, wait for that cat to recover and move on its way. In certain regions where it's dangerous for that cat to move on its way, we'll give it an antidote. So we will, in a very short period of time, reverse that sedative, dissociative, so that the cat can move safely along. Those collars stay on the cats for about a year to a year and a half, depending on the amount of data we're pulling. Two areas left in Santa Cruz Mountains, two pathways in and out. So Coyote Valley is one long disputed corridor where wildlife has been documented moving under Highway 101. And when we look more closely at the landscape, it's human dominated for sure. But wildlife is somehow managing to move under the 101 corridor to get to the Diablo foothills in Mount Hamilton. Further south, we have the Pajaro River, and the Pajaro is another protected area for lions to stealthily move across a human-dominated landscape to, again, reach the Diablo foothills and Mount Hamilton, the Gavilan Range. When we look at GPS data of a mountain lion's movement, we can see very clearly the smaller ranges of the female and the larger ranges of the male. They make longer jaunts as they move on the landscape, and we'll see some of the overlaps of females and males here. When we think about a lion being trapped, there are some good illustrations we have with GPS data, and one in particular of a lion over 6 months, its movement patterns. On one side, it's blocked by a highway. On another, a freeway. And on another, a human residential development. And over 6 months, the lion never makes it out of this entrapment, so it basically is stuck, and it's a really awful, terrible outcome for a mountain lion to be trapped into a small perimeter because it can't move beyond, which is what they do naturally. We have an increase in roadkill mortalities for mountain lions, and we are in the process of working with Caltrans on retrofitting roadways. And to retrofit roadways, there are a number of steps to take before we can actually have implementation of some of these moves. But Caltrans is working collaboratively to understand what it means to retrofit culverts, widen culverts, directional fencing, enabling wildlife to move yet not guiding it onto a deadly roadway. Highway 17 is a particular danger trap for wildlife and for humans, but in particular a stretch of about a mile to 2 miles on Highway 17, a number of Pumas, bobcats, coyotes, deer, and a number of other species have been hit on this stretch of road. On either side of 17 in this area, it's contiguous, very good habitat for wildlife. If we think about dark, narrow, scary culverts, lions won't move through those to the other side. So it's something that we are working through with agencies like Caltrans to consider how we open these up and enable the movement either over or under roadways. This one particular bobcat has come over. There's a loud sound of traffic up on 101 here. He's decided, I'm not ready for this. I'm going right back. Some of these overpasses that are implemented are quite pricey, so we can look at $9, $10 million projects easily. And so it's quite daunting unless we have good data that supports the need for these. Remote camera monitoring is another very important tool in data collection and also citizen science. So we have a number of individuals and communities and groups, organizations working with us to collect images, footage that can contribute to our project via remote cameras. And showing a bunch of images here, but it's especially important to remember, this also speaks about some behavioral patterns and really the ecosystem at work. We've got a number of images where we do show a number of species in sort of following behind the mountain lion's lead. A couple of cubs up in Sonoma County on this particular image, and a lot of curiosity with our remote cameras. A puma will cache the prey, as I'm showing currently, to come back and feed on it later. Cubs are very, especially playful. So in a couple of the images I have up, cubs are not interested in food, just in playing with the mom's tail as she feeds. And a couple of cubs playing hide and seek. So again, just very playful, unaware of some of the dangers that face them as they grow up and move out to establish their home ranges. Some rare behaviors of mountain lions are also caught on remote cameras. So we picked up this particular image of a mountain lion pretty much lying down in an area where he feels safe to bathe and take a quick nap. This cat stayed in this one area for about 45 minutes, and we wished later we had some sound on this one because it was a really nice clip. So this is a really nice sign when a cat's in a region where it feels safe enough to do this. One of our goals is to minimize human-wildlife conflict, and if we do this, we've come a long way in really protecting this important species. Often when a cat is ending up in one of our communities, it is trying to disperse. It's a young cat leaving home, really unaware of where it's heading. And we have had a number of situations in the Bay Area over the last year or two that where lions have ended up in town, often meeting their demise. And so if we think about the Berkeley situation and any of these other situations, the cat was very close to natural habitat. The dispersing cat simply ended up in the wrong place at the wrong time. So the fragmentation, again, is leading to the loss of these natural movement corridors for them. What are our chances of being attacked by a mountain lion? Again, this is an important thing to discuss and recognize, because there is a lot of exaggerated fear around this important keystone species. We have had zero verified attacks in the Bay Area since 1909. That attack in 1909 was a mother and her daughter, and they died of rabies and not from the attack. So we're talking over 100 years ago. Six deaths in California since 1890. These cats are not looking for humans. We are simply not on their menu. You are 150 times more likely to die from a collision with a deer in your car, 2,500 times more likely to die simply from a fall in your home or on a trail. It's more dangerous to walk the streets of any U.S. city at night than it is to live and hike in mountain lion country. And a quick quote from Spirit of the Rockies: deer, bees, goats, and even jellyfish account for more human fatalities than mountain lions. For every person killed by a lion, 1,200 are struck by lightning, and 1,100 are killed by hunting accidents. But it is the predator that captures our imaginations. I started out by mentioning that 85 to 90% of all sightings of mountain lions in California are not. And one quick story, 4, 5, 6 years ago, a number of resources were deployed in the Hayward region after a sighting of a mountain lion was causing great alarm in the community. Over 2 or 3 days, they searched for this lion, deploying helicopters and police cars and troops, basically. And on the final day, the helicopter zoomed in to announce, "We found it. We actually have it trapped." And it turns out it was a big house cat. So this is something that we need to remember when we think we actually are hearing the whole story. A lot of the news organizations had to backpedal on that one. Education and outreach. So when we think about addressing nature deficit disorder, our kids and ourselves, there are a number of things we can do. Mountain lions are important in our ecosystems. We need them here. CatAware is our education program for K-12 and K-14 school programs. So we are currently offering presentations, curriculum design, predator-prey labs, and field visits for the kids. And we offer a number of lectures, volunteer opportunities. We have a couple of great film projects underway that will actually entertain and educate. So look out for those. We also have an interactive portal for the Bay Area Puma Project. And this portal is very informative. We have a number of features on this site, so I encourage you to visit that site at www.bap.org. We have an interactive map for Puma sightings, and all of our cats have Facebook pages, so you can connect to them and become a fan. Puma Wild, there's also an educational game that is almost released. And we are very excited about this game. It will be offered on your phone, your iPad, your computers, laptops, etc. It's especially informative of a puma's plight, yet you get to play the role of the mountain lion. So you can understand while you play this game what it's like to have the difficulty of surviving at increasing levels with human-dominated landscapes. So every level of difficulty you go up in this game, it's more human domination. So please check that out and play it when it's available. We have a tracking series that started in Marin County with 2 very experienced trackers. And catscapes.com is where you can learn about that and sign up. The Puma license plate is another endeavor where we are pulling signatures at pumaplate.org for the California mountain lion. And this is especially important. We're pulling much needed funds to research and educate on the mountain lion. So finally, living in Puma habitat, there are some things we all must remember. Trimming vegetation around the house removes hiding spots. Please do not leave pets or pet food outside at night. It puts every species in peril. Do not feed or attract deer. It's much more difficult to do that. We have a lot of information on our website to teach you how to detract deer. Fence your livestock properly and keep it contained. recreating in puma habitat as well is important to think about how to do that. We want to keep these animals on our landscapes. So go out running, hiking, biking with others. Avoid recreating between dusk and dawn. These animals are very active between dusk and dawn, usually bedding down and sleeping during the day. Never approach a wildlife carcass. The mountain lion could still be feeding on it. You might disturb it, and it may leave, so it may have to seek out another meal. Never approach a puma of any kind or a kitten, especially dangerous. And always, of course, keep children right next to you and close by, never behind you. Again, the chances are very, very rare you would ever encounter a mountain lion. They're very good at avoiding us, and they prefer to do that. But if you do, the simple instructions are to fight back. Maintain eye contact. Appear as big as possible. Never turn your back and run away. And speak loudly, firmly. Throw anything you have, rocks, sticks, backpacks, water bottles. And if you're attacked, of course, fight back. But again, I urge you to think about the fact that this is very highly, highly unlikely. When a cat is not a symbol of threat and is not planning to attack, usually the ears are down, not back. Usually this signals that the puma is kind of wishing it was invisible and wishing we weren't there. The other scenario is when the ears are back and the jaws are bared, and usually this means that cat is pretty upset. And so I would start throwing that water bottle at that point. So finally, bobcats and mountain lions are the two felids we have amongst us. A lot of mistaken sightings of mountain lions are often bobcats. Bobcats have short tails, small, much smaller body cavity, and quite a different look. The mountain lion is longer, leaner. Even the mountain lion cubs have a long tail. Think about that long tail and remember it as you go out for a hike. David Schuller said it best. The mountain lion works a strong magic in the imagination of many Americans. It is the ultimate loner, a renegade presence in the wildest canyons and wildest mountains, the sign of everything that is remote from us, everything we have not spoiled. A couple of those cubs that I just showed up on the screen were two cubs pulled from under a car in Burbank, Southern California. The mother had disappeared from the den, and they wandered out of the den in search of food and were found under a car, very emaciated, a couple months back. And so they are now safe, but they will, however, live the rest of their lives in captivity. And I'm happy to take questions. Thanks.
So, yeah, we're going to go ahead and take questions. If you have a question, please raise your hand, and we'll pass the microphone around. And if you would please wait for the microphone due to the recording. Thank you.
Has there been any consideration for depredation funds to reimburse ranchers, farmers, and so forth? I realize money is not an excessive commodity in the state these days, but there could perhaps be individuals who would support that sort of a thing.
Great. Thanks for that question. It's funds for depredation work well in other countries, and it's something that we've avoided in this region simply because we feel it sends a bad message and the behaviors it would be taken advantage of. But what we also think about with regard to depredation permits is it's much easier for us to learn how to properly house our livestock. And so we have a number of techniques available, including guard dogs now, that completely eliminate issues with predation. And we've got examples that show this very well. So we feel there are better solutions for this. And we're working on those, even though I think it's a great question. I just think that we would like to try to educate first.
Actually, my question follows on the heels of that. As a daughter of a cattle rancher, I wonder, I think a lot of what I was told as a kid was probably from a rancher's point of view, and I wonder about the use of dogs. Could you be a little bit more specific about that? I'd be curious to know what type of dogs are used and how effective they are. And then can I ask one other question, which is, when I'm hiking now, I often will take my dogs with me. Is that a deterrent? To have a dog with you?
So let me answer your first question first. And there are a number of species of dogs that work. I'm happy to share that information with you. The longer list, I can tell you Anatolian Shepherds work very well, and a number of other species that have proven to be 100% successful. There are, I think, at least 35 to 40 breeds that perform this role and quite well for livestock. Second question, which was if your dogs are a deterrent, I can say yes and no. I mean, cats don't like dogs. So when we use hounds to track dogs, we see what happens, right? It's not always the case. So you can't count on that. But I personally would say, yeah, I mean, it's what I've seen. I don't think it's it's not a statistic that we put out there, though. If you go out with a dog, it's not a guarantee that something might, something won't happen. Yeah. Thanks.
I have one other question. So you said in the beginning, or maybe it wasn't in the beginning, but somewhere, that they are easily scared off their prey. So, like, I think I've heard about some of the other cats, they drag it into trees. Do the mountain lions drag it into trees, drag their prey into trees?
So you're asking if the mountain lion drags its prey into trees? Not usually. It's not a common, typically what a mountain lion will do is it will take its prey down, it will feed on it within a half an hour, and it may lie close by, take a nap, come back, but it's not a situation where a cat will drag it up a tree. It may drag it across a road or somewhere safer where there's less of a chance it will run into other species, predators, people, but it's not common that they would pull it up a tree. In some other cat species, yes, that's the case. That's a good question.
Why are humans not on the Puma menu?
We don't taste good.
Is it because of what we wear? That we want natural?
If you think about what a mountain lion is attracted to, it's four-legged creatures. So ungulates are the thing it will typically go after. We simply aren't a natural prey item for the mountain lion. And if a mountain lion preys on a human, there is something very seriously different going on. It's either a very sick cat, there's something that the human has done that possibly separates a mom from its cub. And, usually there's something very obscure happening, but we are simply just not attractive to them as a two-legged creature.
Yeah, I have two questions. You mentioned disease as a source of loss of puma lives. I'm curious if the source is domestic cats and what are the diseases that they're contracting. The second question I have, I work in wolf conservation, and I'm familiar with the use of radioactivated guard boxes that are set off by the radio collars of the wolves that are approaching a livestock operation. Collects data, but it also scares off the wolves. Has anybody used radio-activated guard boxes with pumas that are collared?
Okay, great questions. I'm going to answer your second one first. The radio-activated guard boxes are something that are slightly different for a puma simply because of the way they move on the landscape. But there are forms of it that could possibly be of use. What we're using more is we've got instructions for lighting, sound, alarming sound. Pumas react to different things than wolves. So it's even though they're similar in what they may pursue, they're different in what they react to. So I don't know of anyone using those, but I'm familiar with that, yes. And your first question was, yes. So domestic cats are carrying FIV, and so the feline leukemia FIV, and these diseases are actually starting to show up in our wild felids, bobcats in particular, and mountain lions. Yes.
Hi, you mentioned a couple times about the increase in vehicular collision with mountain lions in cars, and I know that sometimes that can indicate that the population is increasing, so I'm assuming that's not the case for mountain lions. What is the reason for the increase in road kills?
The reason for increase in road kills is simply human development, fragmentation. So when we think about the home range sizes I mentioned, 50 square miles for females on average, 100 to 300 square miles for males. It's increasingly difficult to find that contiguous habitat for mountain lions. So what they're doing is they're running into our roadways. And so we have a complex grid pattern of roadways that chop up their habitat, sometimes in half. So a cat still needs to get across, and this is obviously a very important thing for genetic diversity. So it's coming up against our roadways, and oftentimes trying to get under, it would prefer not to go over if it's a freeway or a highway that's raised, but if it can't get under, it will pop up right at a point where it used to cross, or say it would naturally cross. And then if there's a barrier in the middle of that roadway, such as on Highway 17, It's very alarming to that cat as it's trying to cross the road. And, of course, the cars are moving quite quickly. But it's simply a chopping up of the habitat for them. And it's increasingly of concern because what we've done is really move into their habitat. So we're developing further and further into the wild. And so, you know, cats are just doing what they've always done, which is just survive on deer. And disperse, reproduce, connect populations. It's much more difficult for them to do that in a fragmented landscape, such as San Francisco, Los Angeles, Santa Monica Mountains. And the thing is, the development's increasing. So where we continue to develop out because people would like their little ranchettes or they would like to move out and be right next to wildlife, we actually need to have them play a role in educating themselves on what it means to be right next to wildlife. It means you're taking on a responsibility. This was here before you, so let's figure this out. Yeah, but the population of mountain lions is quite disturbing in California. It's possibly on a severe decline in pockets of California. We don't see mountain lions at all where we used to. So we've got a number of issues such as the cartel and marijuana growing operations that will easily take out wildlife that gets in the way. We've got unpatrolled areas in parts of California and just unpatrolled for any type of poaching. Plus we have increased, again, movements by ranchers to eliminate pumas who simply walk onto their property. So this is actually, as I said, it's a low-density predator. The impact of losing one or two is great.
We have time for one more question.
Could you just expand a little bit on what a dissociative drug is?
Yeah. So a dissociative drug actually stops temporarily your reflexes. So you are aware, but you cannot act on that awareness. So it's basically a temporary suspension of movement. What we do when we work with the lions, we'll usually, and with other wild cats, we'll take away the visual stimulus because that's often quite disturbing. So we'll cover their eyes. But also that dissociative doesn't enable them to blink. So we'll put some ointment in their eyes so they remain moist throughout our process of workup. But it's just a temporary suspension of reflex reaction.
Great, thank you. I just want to take another opportunity to thank Zara McDonald for a very fascinating look at mountain lions. And this concludes tonight's evening of the Commonwealth Club of California.